Listen. Hello? We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
You play to win the game.
Next fan up.
I want winners.
Featuring Pod Vader and the super fans.
They are who we thought they were.
50% of the folks are who we thought they were. The other 50% are all disappointments. Because it's week two, and only half of us could have won. Half of us could have lost. I suppose some of us could have tied, but that's in your sister, and who wants to do that? I'm Pod Vader, a.k.a. Jay Soderberg. I am here once again leading the super fans on the week two preview podcast. I have three super fans here joining me to help me out today. Ryan, the Jaguar super fan, comes back for a second week in a row. Hello, Ryan.
Hey, I love the preview podcast because it's so much more hopeful for me as a Jaguars fan than the recap podcast. Just got to say.
That's very true. That's very true. We have Greg, our Steelers super fan. He did not join us on the preview last week, but he was part of the first battle of the super fans with Patrick and the losing end. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing better. I'm doing better. I've had a week to lick my wounds, and I feel a lot better now that I saw everyone else's teams play. So not everyone is the Patriots, so this is good.
Yeah, that's very true. And the guy who knows that more than anybody, it's Andrew, our Jets superfan. Come out with a win last week, which was somewhat surprising. Well, maybe not. It was the Browns.
Oh, come on. Yeah, it was the Browns. I mean, the fact that every other team in the division also won the game, it's sort of just goes to show that Jet fans can never be fully happy.
No. Only to give your team, your fans, false hope that you'll come out of the cellar to fall right back into it.
The Jets have won the past five season opener, so this isn't anything new, this feeling that I'm feeling right now, and I could see the fall coming. So,
all righty. Well, if you would like to be one of us, we do have an opening, and that is for our Seattle super fan. Apparently, he couldn't take the loss to the Rams, and he decided to call it a super fan career. So we have an opening for a Seattle Seahawks super fan. Just email us at nextfanup@gmail.com and tell us why you are the most passionate Seattle super fan that exists. You can also hit us up on Twitter at Few Podcast or on Facebook. That is facebook.com/NFU Podcast. Or if you're on Facebook already, just search Next Fan Up. You'll find us, and you'll find our super fan write-ups for each of the games. But, you know, instead of telling you more things, why don't I tell you to just sit back and listen as we present a few Battle of the Super Fans, and we'll start with tonight's Thursday night matchup between the Kansas City Chiefs and the Denver Broncos.
Gentlemen, we have a super fan battle here for you. First, I have for you Nick. He is the super fan for the Kansas City Chiefs. How you doing, Nick?
I am doing excited.
Awesome. I'm glad you're excited. You get to play our other super fan today, Mike, who is from the Denver Broncos super fandom. How you doing, Mike?
Hey, what's going on, Mark? It's good to be here.
Doing good, buddy. Doing good. So obviously, I'm going to start with you, Mike. You had a less than desirable first game. Everyone is acting like they did last year with Brady. The sky is falling. Peyton is clearly done. He'll never play quarterback again. This is what is being said. I think it's a little over the top. But I'm curious, where's your concern? How are you feeling about this game? Are you confident that you can go in and beat Big Red, Mr. Kool-Aid, in Kansas City?
See, I don't know if I'd agree with your assessment of everyone thinks the sky is falling. Our defense was phenomenal last Sunday. I truly believe, and I said this early on, and I think people were laughing at me. I know Pod was definitely laughing at me when I said it. We have one of the best defensive units, if not the best defensive units in the National Football League right now. Our offense, you're right, was pretty bad. Lots to be desired there. A lot of worries when it comes to Peyton Manning. He did not look comfortable behind that offensive line. It's the same thing we saw all preseason. The running game was not there. C.J. Anderson, even make it worse, C.J. Anderson now looks like he may be out for this game. I think he's listed as doubtful right now, at least questionable. Ronnie Hillman would be the one coming to step in. If he's not there, Hillman has had a solid preseason, a good game one, but he's always been the guy that's fumbling the ball once it's his time to go. Offense, some questions. That defense, though, I tell you what, I'm looking forward to the team that can move the ball on them, because that will be an exciting game.
Nice. So, Nick, hearing that, obviously Kansas City is not known, well, you know, all the ridicule they get about not being able to throw touchdowns to wide receivers, and Alex Smith is always dumped on. How are you feeling against that defense? How are you guys going to do in this game?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be a tough game, but, I mean, we just faced a tough defense in Houston and dismantled it. And, you know, I mean, I don't disagree with what, you know, the Denver superfan is saying in terms of how stout the defense looked on Sunday. That's fine, but just there's no offensive touchdowns. You're going to need to score some offensive touchdowns to win a game, most likely. And, you know, the Kansas City defense is at least as good as Baltimore's. On the flip side, you know, all we've seen so far this season has been preseason and week one. And it's easy to discount that, but based on that, we've seen the Chiefs have been reinvigorated. They actually have some real big playability. I can't believe I'm in a position to actually, like, hector Denver about plays or lack of big plays, but the reality was that Kansas City really showed the ability, you know, even though we have this patchwork offensive line that was being pushed around by J.J. Watt and others, I mean, he still got his two sacks and he was being disruptive. The Chiefs managed to keep moving the ball steadily, scored on our first five possessions on Sunday, and showed that we could do it a number of different ways. And now that, you know, we have Kelce developed at the tight end position into a fully elite weapon, and Jeremy Maclin also stretched in the field. I mean, the fact that, to me, actually, I mean, some of the bad stats give me some hope based on Sunday. The fact that Jamaal Charles only had 16 carries for 57 yards, which is a really bad day for him. And we dominated offensively in the first half. And then really, I mean, basically the whole second half of the game on Sunday was garbage time. That shows me that that now we have enough complementary other weapons, and that Andy Reid is going to be able to game plan this thing into a win, particularly if Denver looks anything like it has on Sunday or throughout this preseason or even late last season.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's really interesting, guys. So do you have any questions for each other? As you look at these two teams and you look at what the other team is going to offer, do you have any challenges or questions you want to ask each other? We'll start with you, Nick. Do you have any questions or challenges for Mike?
Well, I'm interested in sort of, you know, I can get why, if you're in Denver, you've seen this team be dominant for most of the last 3 years under Peyton Manning, and then it's been sort of shaky, you know, in most of these last few games. I get why there's not, you know, you don't want to totally panic, but what is the rationale for why this looks so bad lately?
So there's a couple things. Like, Peyton Manning behind that offensive line just does not look like Peyton Manning has ever looked. It could be a couple things. Maybe he's old and washed up. I'm not there yet. I'm thinking it has a lot to do with he just needs to gain confidence in that line. There's another factor to this game. So that game one was against Baltimore, a team that Gary Kubiak just came from, a team that knows Gary Kubiak and how he's going to call a game, just as good as Gary Kubiak does. I'm kind of hoping, and it is definitely hoping at this point, because the offense was absolutely horrendous, like you pointed out. I'm hoping that was they're playing a defense that is a very good defense that knows Gary Kubiak very well. Hopefully there's a scheme advantage that Baltimore was able to draw up and kind of hold back our offense to make it look as pitiful as what it did.
I mean, that's interesting. I mean, I watched the game on Sunday as well, and I didn't see so much of a scheme advantage. I mean, as just it looked like a preseason game to me, honestly, with how sloppy the offense looked, and it was something that was just bizarre to see that out of Denver. As you know, as I'm speaking from, you know, being a Kansas City fan standpoint, where we have been 0-6 against Denver under Peyton Manning, but if you know. But Peyton Manning has played with bad offensive lines at Indianapolis in years before. He's never looked this bad. Things that looked bad were his throws and just generally the ability for them to be on the same page. I mean, considering this is just going to be 4 days after that, I'm more confident than I've ever been that Kansas City can pull out a win, particularly at home in a fired-up primetime environment.
Mike, do you have any challenges or questions on that?
Well, he mentioned another great point. So this is a Thursday night game, and I don't know if it's the first real Thursday night game of the season, being that it's the first one played as a short week. Thursday night is historically the sloppiest football in generally the worst football to watch of any other game. I'd rather watch two bad teams play on a Sunday than a Thursday night game. It's always horrible, like watching those two teams line up against each other. It's going to be a challenge for Denver going into Kansas City. It's hard to defend that offense based on what we've seen so far. Peyton Manning, in my eyes, him missing those throws are generally when his feet are not underneath him. He's got happy feet right now. He's just not sitting back there getting comfortable in the pocket like he has in the past. They haven't run in the bootleg. Peyton Manning is not a bootleg quarterback. It's hard to defend him right now. I'm just kind of hopeful. I don't think he's done. He's got the arm. He's just not hitting the throws.
If you had to give a final score, what is your prediction for the game?
I'm going 19-13, the exact same score against the Ravens. We'll go two field goals versus four field goals, throwing a touchdown to both teams.
Nice, and you're saying the win.
I'm calling the win.
Nice. And on your side, what are you thinking, Nick? What is your score prediction?
I'm actually kind of jaded on this. I mean, I think the conventional wisdom would be a low-scoring affair, but I think it actually has the potential to be similar to the, you know, the Seattle Rams game in week one, where it's two stout defenses, but somehow they're also both going to be pretty aggressive, and somehow that gives way to some turnovers, some big plays. I think it's going to be more higher scoring. I mean, I think I guess something like 28-20, something like that, maybe 28-14 even, is how confident I am in a Kansas City victory.
All right, another super fan battle. This time we have Patrick, who is the super fan for the Patriots. How you doing, Patrick?
I'm good, Mark. How you doing?
Doing good, buddy. On the other side, I have Andrew, a super fan for the Buffalo Bills, who are a surprise hit right now. How you doing, Andrew?
I'm doing fine, thanks.
Nice, man. So I'm going to start off with Patrick, just in honor of the Super Bowl, you know, heroes here. You guys are the champions to be knocked down. How are you feeling about this game? Buffalo looked pretty sharp last week. Your old friend Rex Ryan is leading the way. How do you think you guys are going to do?
You know, it's funny. There are two things that I've been pretty consistent about on our podcast for really like the last 5 years. And it's that I'm always concerned about Rex Ryan. I don't care how bad his team is. And I'm always concerned about the Bills because they always play us tough. You know, and granted, they generally don't beat us. You know, they got a little mop-up duty in, you know, week 17 last year when we were resting our starters. They won that game. I think 4 years earlier, maybe like 2011, I think they won a game during the regular season. Then you got to go like way back to like 2003, you know, in the season opener. I think it was the last time they beat the Patriots before that. So it's you can pretty much chalk them up for two wins a year generally. But, you know, if you actually watch the games, they're never really easy wins. Sometimes they are. They're usually not easy wins, though.
Nice. And obviously, this team looks really hot. Andrew, as you see your team, and you had what blew me the most away of your team was the quarterback. I was not expecting quarterback play like I saw out of that game from your quarterback. I thought LeSean looked good. He didn't have his breakout game, but it's coming. And obviously, we all know that defense is legit. So, yeah, what are you thinking, Andrew? How are you feeling about the team?
Well, week one was interesting for the Bills. They came in with a lot of hype. Rex Ryan was talking up the defense. Everybody was wondering what kind of quarterback Tyrod Taylor would be because clearly he looked the best in the preseason. And when they brought over Greg Roman, the offensive coordinator from San Francisco, he kind of built this Bills offense to like he had in San Francisco. He had Vernon Davis and Delanie Walker as his tight end. So Buffalo went out and overpaid for Charles Clay from Miami. He's the highest paid tight end currently in the NFL, which wouldn't stump a lot of people if you asked them that. And they got the mobile quarterback like Colin Kaepernick, and Frank Gore was a big bruiser. Brandon McCoy is a bit of a different runner than Frank Gore, but this offense was expected to run kind of how it did in San Francisco in week one, although Taylor, you know, he looked great. He had a lot of short stuff, and the one big play to Percy Harvin, he only threw 19 passes, and that would be perfect for Buffalo because they don't want to rely on the quarterback throwing 30 times a game. So as long as the defense can just, you know, keep up what they did against Andrew Luck, that would be the key to success. But the problem is week one, Brady got the ball out in 1.8 seconds, and everybody was amazed at how quick Buffalo got to Andrew Luck, which was 2.6, but Brady has just owned the Bills, even the past 2 years when Buffalo's defense has been great, with the short games to Edelman, and nobody can cover Rob Gronkowski, so it'll be interesting to see what happens.
Do you have any questions? Oh, go ahead, Patrick.
Well, it's just he's touching on it. You know, it's why these games are close. Tom Brady and his release time sort of negates that amazing defensive front that Buffalo has, their front four anyway, like just arguably the best in the league. You know, I'd say like the best defensive fronts in the NFL, defensive lines anyway, are Buffalo and Miami. You know, so it's kind of a taller. Thankfully, and he hit the nail on the head, Tom Brady's going to get rid of the football in 2 seconds, so we don't really have to worry about pressure coming off the edge, just the pressure up the middle. It's a bit of a concern because we have three rookies starting on our interior, and our center's an undrafted rookie at that. But, I mean, they held their own last week against the Steelers. It's pretty easy to get overconfident when you watch that game and you watch, you know, the precision that the Patriots offense played with. You know, but like I said on our reaction podcast the other day, that was the single worst coaching job I've ever seen in the NFL for preparing a team. And considering it's the first game of the season when you have the whole summer to prepare, that's unforgivable. I do not think Rex Ryan is going to come in and put together a performance like Mike Tomlin did. So I am a little concerned about, you know, the Bills in general and specifically their defense and their ability to, let's say, cover Rob Gronkowski. They might not be able to do it well, but I think they're at least going to try, which puts them ahead above the Steelers, you know, or Edelman for that matter, who is also running uncovered half the plays for the game. You know, so that elite performance that we saw from Tom Brady and the Patriots offense, I think, gets called into check a little bit in this game. And then on the flip side of the ball, our defensive backfield, you know, the elephant in the Patriots room for the entire offseason, and luckily, you know, we were still able to pull out a win last week, you know, despite having an elite quarterback on the field. And Tyrod Taylor's not that. I think he threw for like under 190 yards last week. This could be the game, though, where he comes out and throws for 240, 260, you know, and shows that he has a legitimate arm. Because if you look back at the Patriots' defenses from, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, that's what guys did. You know, these middling, like, fringe quarterbacks that are, like, arguably starters but probably bench guys come in and just light up the defensive backs because they can't cover. And I really, really hope that's not what's going to happen here this week.
Mm-hmm. Do you have any questions or challenges for Andrew?
I'm curious. So do you think that Rex Ryan is going to get out from under the foot of Bill Belichick this season?
I think Rex has definitely probably might have the best challenge against the New England Patriots. This week is obviously an important one. And although Buffalo did a great job of getting after Andrew Luck last week, they're getting Marcell Dareus back this week. They didn't use him because of the suspension last week. So how great Buffalo's defense was last week, they didn't even have Dareus. So he'll be back this Sunday. And like you said, the Patriots are starting three rookies. That'll be interesting to see. And although I don't expect Buffalo to generate a big pass rush, just because like we discussed, Tom gets rid of the ball quick. The key is for obviously Buffalo running the football. Steelers were able to move the ball up and down, I think, with D'Angelo Williams, who's been in the league for quite some time, against Patriots defense. That was quite shocking to me watching the game. I didn't think they'd be that bad. It's obviously the Steelers had the whole summer to game plan for this, but it's, you know, I don't think this is going to be a kind of game where Tyrod Taylor is going to throw for 240 or 250, just because then that means Buffalo hasn't been able to run the ball, and they're keeping Brady on the field, and he's thrown, you know, two or three touchdowns to Gronk, and that's just not their game. I don't think Taylor will. If he does, then he's going to have probably a couple interceptions and turnovers. He's they definitely want to try to stick to the mold of throwing no more than 25 passes. And although I think they will want to test the secondary of the Patriots, it's going to rely just on the running game. Buffalo wants to run the ball a lot. I think the one guy who might have a big game against the Patriots is Charles Clay. Like I said, the tight end. New England struggled against Heath Miller last week, and Clay is a lot more athletic than Heath Miller. So I think a lot of the stuff that Roman does with Clay moving him in different formations, just like if you want to go back and watch how the 49ers used Delanie Walker, that's just the perfect thing to watch for how Buffalo's going to use Charles Clay. Right down the seam, kind of Taylor's window, right down the middle. Another guy to watch out for is Carlos Williams, the running back from Florida State, who's a rookie. I think Belichick's going to game plan all week for stopping LeSean McCoy. He usually does that. Belichick focuses on one team's best offensive weapon and does whatever he can to shut down that guy and make you beat him with other secondary players. I think Carlos Williams is a big back who can kind of knock over the Patriots secondary and get in the second level.
Nice, man. So
more on Williams than on McCoy. I mean, yeah, I could be wrong, but like if Belichick is going to usually focuses like on one guy and then maybe a secondary attention on a second, and then your number three option is going to have a big day. But I think it's, as a guess, I would say it's going to be number one Williams and number two Charles Clay. And I don't think they're going to help with Charles Clay very much because, you know, our strong safety is terrible.
So we're coming close, guys, to the end of time here. I need predictions. What are you thinking, Patrick? If you had to give me a score on this game, what's it going to be?
I'll go 31-20 Patriots.
31-20 Patriots. I like it. Andrew, how are you feeling? 11 points underdog, according to Patrick. What do you think?
You know what? As exciting as this build-up has been for the Bills, I predict them beating the Patriots just because it's happened that long. I doubt New England will score as many as people think. I think it's going to be something like 24-16 New England, kind of a lower, you know, Brady won't absolutely move the ball up and down the field. Rex will give him some issues, but something like that, I think, is what to expect.
All right. I think we are here with possibly the biggest battle of the super fans because we are pretty big rivals here. My name is Mark Sitko. I am the Eagles super fan, and I have with me the Cowboys super fan, Brian. How you doing, Brian?
I'm doing good, Mark. I think we've been looking forward to this for about 6 months now, so ready to finally make this happen.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it a lot more than I am at this moment. Actually, I have to say, with your injuries, I'm all right. But after losing, we really need to win this game. So tell me how you're feeling. You guys don't have Dez. You don't have Randy Gregory, which are both I'm bummed because I would – you know, if we don't beat you – if we even if we beat you now, I don't know if I can beat you full strength in a couple weeks. We play you again in November. So how are you feeling? Without those two guys, how are you guys going to pull this off? How's your team looking?
Man, I'm telling you, Sunday was so much of a glass half full, half empty kind of day because we got this win against the Giants, this last second dramatic victory that we shouldn't have really even been in because we turned the ball over so much, but we really dominated the game on the field, and then we have all these injuries. Oh, it was just back and forth, back and forth. So now coming into Philly, and like you said, no Dez, no Randy Gregory, no Scandrick, no Hardy. No McClain, so we're coming in shorthanded. And after watching Julio just torch Byron Maxwell in that secondary, oh my goodness, how bad I want to see Dez out there just running circles around y'all. But we're not going to have him. It's going to be on the rest of the guys. Terrence Williams is he's getting called out. Essentially, we didn't have Dez in the offseason, so Terrence Williams got to run number one receiver through all the offseason programs. So it's going to be real interesting to see if he can hold up in that role. He looked good at the end of the Giants game. Of course, it is the Giants. And, you know, Romo was on fire at the end of that game. So it would be real interesting to see if offensively we can hold up without the running backs. Still a huge point of controversy. Again, you know, half full, half empty. We only had 80 yards on the ground, but our running back trio did put up 212 total yards. So, you know, it's not DeMarco Murray. That's not how we're going to get yards, but we did move the ball with our running back. So I am feeling pretty good about that. Still have to say our trio does pale in comparison to your trio, despite how they looked, or at least two of them looked against Atlanta on Monday night.
Yes, Murray and Matthews did not have great nights. I mean, that's, I have to say, I have to give mad props to the Falcons front seven. They played a great game. Our offensive line did not look nearly as good as I was hoping it would. And yes, they were able to, yeah, I think it was something like, what? It's a horrible stat. It's something like 9 yards on 8 carries for Murray. Just totally pathetic. Whatever it is, it was bad. He had a 12-yard loss at one point, which was kind of a weird play. He got like bumped and then like reestablished himself. And then they allowed him to drive him back like 6 more yards. I was like, whoa, whoa. Either way, with forward progress, that shouldn't have been a 12-yard loss. It's a little crazy, but what can you do? Yeah, man, it's going to be a really interesting game. Like I said, I'm bummed not to play you guys full strength, but at the same time, I mean, not having to deal with Dez is a whole other game. My first big question for you is, who's the third receiver now? So now that we have Terrence and Beasley, Beasley stays in the slot, I would assume, and who takes the other side, or what is the situation?
Well, I think what we're going to see a lot more of, rather than three receivers out there, we've been pushing Escobar. To see Devin Street. Yeah, it's going to be Gavin Escobar. I think we're going to see more of that two tight end set.
That's a good set. I mean, if Escobar can block as well anywhere near as well as Witten, I mean, running off both sides is nice. You know?
If Escobar can learn to be productive outside of the red zone, it would be nice. You know, he's catching touchdowns, but we don't see him much in between the 20s. I think you'll see a lot of that. You'll see a little bit of Devin Street. I don't think you'll see much of Bryce Butler, who we got from the Raiders this week. I keep pushing to see more Lucky Whitehead. I just don't think he's quite ready. He was our last receiver who snuck onto the roster. Tons of upside, but he's a project and he has to develop. So I would anticipate seeing a lot more two tight end sets. And really we're going to have to lean even more on the running game than we did last week. It's going to have to be the running game of last year where we can just establish drives and dominate time of possession. I was thrilled to see the way we dominated time of possession against the Giants, but we're going to have to move the ball on the ground a little stronger than we did last week.
Yeah, the person that was really impressed me out of those trio of running backs was Dunbar. He's clearly your receiving back. He's clearly your third down back. And, I mean, he was looking Sproles-esque. And, I mean, I say that with a lot of respect. Sproles is a great receiver and great player, you know, been in the league a long time. And Dunbar was killing it. He really made that – you were really stoked on Romo in that final drive. And don't get me wrong, Romo did a great job there. But to me, who made that drive was Dunbar. Dunbar caught two balls that were short, you know, checkdowns and drove them upfield, took nothing, you know, didn't let it leave a single yard on the field. Very, very impressive. Obviously, the Giants, I don't know. I mean, if they weren't prevent, I want to go and, like, smack Coughlin in the face. I don't know what the hell they were doing. But I think what comes down is they have no way of pressuring you. You know what I mean? You guys should have been doing what you did on that drive to them all game. And I think you guys, if you played another game right now, you guys would be able to do that. I think just like we were, your team warmed up throughout that game, and we really saw what you were capable of at the end. To give some props, the thing I love the most, man, was watching the video of Dez Bryant standing in the tunnel after the game, greeting the dudes. Like, I don't, you know me, I don't like Dez Bryant. I hate that team and everything. That was cool, man. That's the energy, like you've talked about, as him as a leader. That's something that, you know, most guys would be hanging their heads and going into negativity, like, whoa, me, I want to be out there. And the fact that he cares more about those guys coming off the field and that they kicked its butt even without him, that was beautiful, man. That's an awesome, that's what it's all about. And I do have to give you props there. Do you have any questions for me or anything about this game? Yeah, how, any thoughts, any challenges for our team that you're worried about? I mean, with you guys, it's clearly the injuries. For us, I thought Bradford played well, right? Like, I thought he played well enough for a first game in 2 years. You know, I couldn't have expected better. I think he will only get stronger. He's definitely an upgrade over Foles, although Foles had a good game. But for us, he's a better upgrade over Foles, and he's a better upgrade over Sanchez. There's no question. So we're stoked. We'll see what he can do. We need those running backs, the running game, to get better. I think we'll have a better chance against you guys, but you guys do have Lee and a couple great linebackers. And, you know, you guys could do well against the run. That's going to be an interesting question. I am stoked that DeMarco Murray is not making this a big deal. He's very much downplaying that it's another game. I think he realizes he hasn't proven anything in Philly yet, and he needs to do that. And I like to see his kind of humble approach. But, I mean, you know this, that Murray is a very humble guy.
There's no way that he's saying all the right things. You know this game matters to him.
Totally.
No.
Hell yeah.
You know.
No, he wants
to put up 170 yards against the Cowboys and show everyone that it wasn't just the O-line. So props to him. He's a great guy, humble guy. But you know inside he is burning up to just drop a 70-yard run on us in the first quarter.
He's going to be on fire for that. And I hope he does some punishing. That's the one thing I really like about him. His best play, maybe, of that whole game, he broke out and Trufant kind of went down to tackle him, and he just laid his shoulder into Trufant. And I love that idea of a running back who can actually be inflicting damage. And that's just not Shady. We haven't had a guy like that in a while, and it's nice to see that from DeMarco and Ryan to a bit. But really, that's totally DeMarco's game. Our defense, like you said, was very suspect, and it's a shame we don't have another like huge test. I mean, Romo's a great test getting the ball around, but I mean specifically to test Maxwell, like that we don't have some receiver who can really put him, you know, to the test. Like Julio just ate him alive. There was nothing we could do. What was ticking me off is that Billy Davis wasn't pressing Julio. And what Chip said after the game is that they just did an amazing job. He gave the Falcons credit. They just did an amazing job of moving around. And he said, on top of that, you have to give Julio credit. Not many players in the league can play from, he literally played for maybe six or seven different lineup positions on that offensive line in that game, on that offensive side. It was very impressive. We never were getting a good press on him. Often he was lined up against a linebacker or a safety, which is just crazy. So I think that Billy has some work to do to figure out so that other teams can't do that. But without Dez, I mean, like, I don't worry about Terrence the same way. I'm curious about Beasley. It really comes down to I know that Romo can put the ball where he wants to, and as long as somebody gets open, he's going to get him the ball. I think Witten could have a huge day. He often gives us fits. So yeah, man, it's gonna be a great game. How are you feeling? You feeling you're gonna win? What is your prediction?
My heart and my head are arguing right now. You know, in my heart, I want to say the Cowboys are going to destroy the Eagles, put y'all down an 0-2 hole, really just put the screw. But with all the injuries being the first week of such an emotional game, I just think they're just to overcome 1 week after all these injuries. It kills me. I want to see us go to Philly and just stomp y'all. But I do think we're going to come up a little bit short this week, and it kills me to just say that. I think 27-23, I think you guys bounce back. Now, it is a short week for the Eagles, so I did have to take that into consideration. But I can't imagine with a rivalry that's going to be brewing all season that we go through week two, anything but both being 1-1. So y'all better win this game. You guys have better win this game for sure. And if we win, you will not hear the end of it from me. So fair warning. Fair warning, next fan up nation. You will not hear the end of it. But my head's telling me we're going to lose by four.
If we can't beat you now, what help do we have later? You know what I mean? It's like exactly. We have to beat you now. If you're down now without a pass rusher, because I think Gregory might be harder to replace than Dez. Because Dez, you have some other weapons, you still have Romo, but like, who else is going to come off that edge? When you guys get Hardy and Gregory back, you guys are going to be in great shape, but it's going to be a couple weeks. How long do you expect Dez to be out? That's my other prediction I wanted from you. They first said 4 to 6 weeks. I've seen these people trying to be anti-Cowboys, saying it could go to like 12. What do you think? What do you think is a realistic place? And I guess the big question is he back by Seattle, which is like game six or so for you guys? How do you think?
And it's so hard to tell. Yeah, I've heard 4 to 6. I've heard 8. I've heard 12. Dez is an athletic freak, so I want to make the comp to Adrian Peterson that he can come back earlier and sooner on all these injury timetables. But it's tough. You know, you never know how guys are going to come back, especially from a foot injury, how they're going to react when they get back on the field. I wouldn't be surprised if it was closer to that 5-6 week time period. I don't know if he'll be back for Seattle. I don't push it either and do some more damage before he's ready. I think a lot will have to do with how the team is playing is as to how quick they'll push him. Gregory, I think, will come back sooner. I think 4 weeks probably is pretty accurate with his high ankle sprain. And PFF had him as the number one 4-3 defensive end last week. He's a monster, and what a steal. And like you said, him, Hardy, DeMarcus Lawrence, Tyrone Crawford, who we didn't even touch on, who I expect to just rip y'all apart inside this week. Gosh, what a defense! What a jump we've made in 1 year from one of the worst defensive lines to one of the best. So hopefully these guys can come back soon and come back healthy and at full strength. That's a scary team.
Yeah. I thought Gregory looked great. I have nothing bad to say about him. He was by far one of the best. I liked Vic Beasley, too. There's a couple of young guys this weekend that did some great stuff, but definitely Gregory. Yeah, he looked amazing. I'm you know, more pleasantly happy he won't be there hitting Sam Bradford than I am that we don't get to challenge ourselves against Dez. If I had to make a prediction, I can't be bold because I really thought we were going to handle the Falcons, and we didn't. You guys are injured, and we are at home, but, you know, we'll see where we go. I think it's going to be something more like 31. Hopefully we'll get up in the 30s, and then you guys maybe 28. All right. Another super battle. This time there's a one-sided battle. We do not have a super fan for the Seahawks. How ridiculous is that? One of the best teams in the league. A team that was just in the Super Bowl last year. Yes, they didn't look so good in the opener. That's no reason to give up now, super fans. You can be the Seahawks super fan. Please reach out to us. You can tweet at us at NFU Podcast. You can find us on Facebook. If you love the Seahawks and you want to be on this podcast regularly, reach out to us. We just want to hear about you. Make sure we'll vet you a little bit. Make sure you know what you're talking about when it comes to your team. And if you are a super fan, you can be that guy. It's really fun. I think you'd enjoy it. Please join us. But I do have the other super fan here today in this battle, Green Bay. Brian, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I'm a little disappointed to be talking to you, Sitko. Don't take it personally, but it no. does hurt a little bit that we're missing that other Seattle super fan. I hate to beat up on an empty opponent.
How great would it be if the Seahawks didn't show up and you just got the win? I mean, that's going to be a tough game, especially with them coming off a loss to the Rams. They're going to be pissed. How are you feeling? Are you guys going to beat them? How's it going to go?
I'm feeling pretty good. Vegas, I think, has us at 3.5, and I don't think I like us quite that much, but I like our chances to win at home. It's been a long time since we've lost at home, and a little pound of flesh from last season might go good with my beer on Sunday.
Nice. What do you think the keys of the game? What are you scared about with that you're facing in Seattle? What do you want to see your team accomplish?
Couple things that I'm looking for us to accomplish. We looked a little methodical last game. Last season we had a lot of really big explosive plays. I think Jordy Nelson probably played a big part of that, and we just didn't look like we had that same explosive nature to our offense. We were just a lot more dink and dunk. Something I expect we'll probably see a lot more of this season, a little more ball control, not putting up 50 burgers against the Eagles or against the Bears or any of those other teams that we so handily beat last year. But I think it'll be a close game. I'm thinking we'll see a lot of Eddie Lacy. One of my keys that I'll be watching is Randall Cobb. Last week he looked a little bit limited, and if he can be himself, I really do think that he can be kind of our biggest tactical advantage, that movable chess piece, able to play him inside, in the backfield, outside, keep him away from the Seattle defense and keep him in space. But that's all under the assumption that he can actually be the Randall Cobb that we all know. Last week he had to kind of protect him a little bit. It looked like we had game plans to throw him out and put him in situations where he wasn't going to get hit. So I think if we can play him like we normally play Randall Cobb and kind of open him up a little bit, if he's capable of doing that, I think he's one of the keys to the game. The other is going to be the offensive line. Lacy ran okay last week, but the offensive line looked better. They were on up holes. I don't think Rodgers was touched all game. We're going to need exactly that against Seattle, protection up front and plowing those roads for the big steamer, Eddie Lacy.
I was talking with Tom, who is the Chicago super fan, and he believed that James Jones was going to be your top receiver. Do you think that's the same? Do you believe that? Or if Cobb got his act together, could Cobb be that guy? How do you see that dynamic?
It's an interesting question. I would say he might catch more passes than Randall Cobb, but I bet Randall Cobb scores more. The reverse of that. I bet Randall Cobb catches more passes, but James Jones could score more touchdowns. Just a few years ago, he caught 15 and... it looked like he was pretty much on the same page with Rodgers from the get-go. So he was only out for 1 year. It seems like a lot longer. But, yeah, he looked like there was no real gaps in the knowledge between those two. And I was really impressed with how quickly he assimilated to the offense.
Nice, nice. The other question I have is I also picked up your tight end on one of my teams. Tell us about this guy. Do you know anything about this tight end? Is he somebody that could develop into a receiver for Aaron, or is he more of a blocking tight end?
No, I assume you're talking about Richard Rodgers.
Exactly, Richard Rodgers.
He's definitely more of a receiving tight end. I also have him on two of my three fantasy teams. He's a guy I targeted late. You know, after you get past a certain point with the tight ends, there's really nobody left, so you just pick the guy you think has the best chance. And number one tight end in the Packers offense could be pretty good. He looked great last year and for the late stretches of the season. Rodgers has said he has the best hands of anybody on the team, which is obviously high praise. But you're right. You asked a little bit about blocking versus catching. He was a former wide receiver in college, so if you ever watch him run block, you can definitely tell. But if you watch him catch a ball, you can tell the same way. So, yeah, he's a guy I own too, and I'm hoping he breaks out this year too, just like all my other Packers brethren.
Totally. I got him so late that I'm like, yeah, he'd be a great keeper if he became that kind of, you know, just – he doesn't have to – Graham or Gronk. I just need him, you know, is he a guy that's going to catch a couple touchdowns in this season and, you know, have that chance to be a release valve, I guess you want to call it, for a quarterback. Is there anything else you want to say about this game before you give us a prediction, Brian?
I'm going to say that the defense last week made the Bears look pretty darn good. And I'm a little bit nervous looking at the Seahawks.
That's definitely the weakness of your team. I mean, there's no question. You guys have one of the best quarterbacks and offenses in the league, and it really is all every year, right? How strong is that defense, and can they slow people down more than Rodgers can score? What do you think? Well, go ahead.
That's the story. We lost Sam Barrington this week. That's going to be more painful than I think most casual fans will realize. He's obviously not a big name, but what it really means is we're not going to be able to rotate Clay outside as much. He's going to have to play much more inside. It's really probably our shallowest position group. We really only have two no-name guys, Nate Palmer and Jake Ryan, who if you weren't the Packers super fan, you might not know anything about. The other thing that really stuck out from last week was just how bad Sam Shields looked. He had one decent pass breakup in the end zone, but he was tackling – or trying to tackle, I should say, these sort of almost sort of trying to tackle. It looked like he was making business decisions on the field, just shying away from contact. We're going to need swarming tacklers versus Marshawn. That's got to stop this week.
Awesome, man. That is all great stuff. Give me a prediction. What's the score? What are you thinking?
I'm going to say 28-25 Packers.
Wow, I like the weird 25 number. That's great.
I feel
great.
Like the Seahawks probably are going to try to do some tricky thing, and they'll probably get it. Could be an onside kick. That wouldn't surprise me at all. Just to test out that special teams unit that got embarrassed last year. So,
all right, those are the Battle of the Superfan guys. Let's give our quick picks here on the games. We'll start with Thursday. It is the Broncos and the Chiefs, I promised useless stats, and Adam Schefter helped provide this one, saying that the Broncos are going to try to do something tonight in Kansas no other NFL team ever has done, and that is set the NFL divisional road win streak. They currently have won 12 consecutive divisional road games dating back to 2011. That ties the San Francisco 49ers of 87 through 90. So if they win tonight, they will make that win streak longer and the longest in NFL history, and I believe that's exactly what's going to happen. Broncos win. Ryan?
Pick for that game? I'm taking the Kansas City Chiefs.
And Greg?
I'm going with Arrowhead.
Andrew?
I'm going with the Broncos. I didn't see the Chiefs show anything new on offense. They're still not throwing the ball more than 10 yards in the air. And I think that elite, that top Denver Broncos defense is going to take advantage.
The next game up that was featured was the Patriots versus the Bills. I'm obviously going to take the Patriots. I will say that Rex Ryan has a pretty decent record versus Bill Belichick and does play the Patriots close. I still don't believe the Bills are for real, though. I will take the Patriots. Brian?
I'm kind of with you. I like the Patriots in this game. I do probably like a little more than you after what they did in week one. But I think it's getting a little too much right now, and I think the Patriots come in with the W.
Greg?
I'm going with the Bills. I just think defense plays early in the season over the offense, and I think the Patriots have a lot of holes still to fill that the Bills are going to be able to capitalize on.
Andrew.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Bills. I think the interior of the New England Patriots offensive line, starting three rookies, is going to have a really big problem with that aggressive Rex Ryan scheme and all that talent the Bills have there on the offensive line, on the defensive line.
We heard from Dallas and Philadelphia. That's going to be a pretty crazy game. Tony Romo has won four of his past five starts versus Philadelphia. Has won, or I should say has prevailed, in his past three starts at Philadelphia. I will take the Cowboys. Ryan.
I'm kind of going with the Eagles in this one. I did pick the Falcons to win last week against them, but I think this time Philly at home, I don't see them. I could see them starting 0-2, but I just feel a little bit better about the Eagles in this game. Maybe DeMarco Murray has a nice revenge game.
Greg.
No Dez, no win. I just don't know where their offense goes in Dallas without Dez, and they have no lead back, really. So, going Eagles, as much as I hate to.
Andrew.
I'm gonna go with the Eagles. It seems like they figured something out in the second half last week. And again, the loss of Dez Bryant is a huge impediment for Dallas to come out with the W. So I'm going to go with Philadelphia, making it 1-1.
By the way, Greg, my pick, you reminded me that Dez Bryant is out for this game. I am going with the Eagles. I'm changing it. Totally changed. That's what makes them the perfect useless stats. The Seahawks are at the Packers. I used to say Arrowhead as just a reason for picking games. You could also say Lambeau Field for a reason why you're just going to pick a game. And that's what I'm doing here. I'm taking the Packers to win at Lambeau Field. Ryan.
This game is so interesting to me. I actually follow the Packers kind of closely, second like to the Jaguars. I just have to say this is kind of a reason why I love sports. Going back to the Fail Mary is just a weird voodoo thing the Seahawks have on the Packers. I do believe the Packers are very good and the Seahawks have problems, but I just have to take the Seahawks. I think they'll win.
Greg.
I'm gonna take the Packers for the exact reason that the Seahawks, I don't think right now are the team they're going to be at the end of the year. I think they have a lot of things to figure out right now, and the Packers don't. So,
Andrew?
Yeah. After everything that's happened with them from the Fail Mary game to the NFC title game last year, I think Aaron Rodgers kind of come out, take advantage of a Cam Chancellor-less secondary and pick up the W.
By the way, I didn't really give a useless stat, so check out Aaron Rodgers. He has 41 touchdowns, no picks, a 124.4 rating in the past 17. That includes the playoffs. At home has 512 consecutive attempts, touchdowns in a row without an interception. That also includes the playoffs. His last interception at home was on December 2nd, 2012. So there you go. Some useless stats for the Battle of the Superfan game. And now we'll get into the games that were not featured head-to-head. And AJ, we're going to start with you helping us out here with the Falcons versus the Giants.
Right. So this game, there's going to be a lot of points up in this game because as you saw on the last couple of drives Dallas had Sunday night, that defense is, as Tom often would say, they went like a knife through hot butter. Or is it a hot knife through butter? I don't even know. Some type of cliche. But the point remains the same, that the Giants don't have the talent on defense to keep up with my offensive player of the year pick this year, Julio Jones. They have the secondary players in Dominic Rodgers, Cromartie, and Prince Amukamara, but they don't have the pass rush to take advantage of a shaky Atlanta offensive line. On the other side of the ball, the Giants are going to have to run the ball down Atlanta's throat, try to out-physical them on the offensive line. The offensive line looked pretty good last week against Dallas, so maybe they could keep up with Atlanta, but I do have to choose a game in this pigskin pick'em, so I'm going to go with the Falcons to beat the Giants. Probably a score of a 28-24. It's going to be a close game, just I think the Giants are going to choke in the end.
You know, I failed to mention our Pigskin Pick'em group. You can join us right now at ESPN.com. Go to the Pigskin Pick'em and search for Next Fan Up. Currently leading the clubhouse is DZO69. Also, ESPN 4738 3947. So those are the two guys right now leading the Next Fan Up group on Pigskin Pick'em.
Robots.
Jason Goodyear. Jason Goodyear and our Charger super fan come in next. And then I lead a group of people all tied at in fifth place with 10 picks from last week. In this game here, the Falcons versus the Giants, as I'm looking for a good useless stat to use, they're all pretty useless. The series is tied 11-11. Matt Ryan, according to the stats, by the way, if you want to know where I get these useless stats from, they're straight from NFL. As a matter of fact, it's nfllabor.files.wordpress.com. It gives you a PDF of each game every week. Matt Ryan is apparently really good in September. He's got some great September stats. This one is just going to go early on my hatred of the New York Giants and my love of my boyfriends, the Atlanta Falcons, who looked great in the first half and was making me look like a genius, only to show just how much I'm not a genius in the second half of that game against the Eagles. I'm going to go with the Falcons, though, here. Our next game up is the Cardinals versus the Bears. Greg, this one's yours.
For a Bears super fan, he thinks the Arizona offensive line ain't good, and the Saints made them look very average. And the Bears pass rush barely showed up last Sunday, and if Aaron Rodgers was even touched, he doesn't remember it. The Bears are looking for a different result this Sunday. No team in the NFL has allowed fewer rushing yards in week one than the Cardinals, who gave up 54 yards on 20 carries. The Bears are committed to running with this very little wide receiver and ran the ball very well against the below average Packers run defense. So his third point was that the Bears are going to have to pay special attention to Darren Fells, who caught a 48-yard touchdown pass on Sunday in his game against the Saints. All he caught four passes for 82 yards. The Bears linebackers looked lost in coverage on Sunday, so this point has him very worried. He didn't give a game prediction, but I'm sure he's going, since Tom is self-loathing, he's going with the Cardinals in the game. But, and then for our Cardinals side of the ball, our Cardinals super fan, I guess, is going to have shame because I didn't see a write-up from him. But he's a busy man.
Brooks. Yeah, Drew Brooks. He's a very busy man there at ESPN, and I haven't been on him to get his stuff in, and clearly he's not getting his stuff in, so that doesn't work. So in replacement of Drew Brooks, I'm going to give you a bunch of useless stats. The Bears in this series have won four of their past five. They last beat the Cardinals 28-13 way back in 2012. That's how useless these stats are, ladies and gentlemen. That said, as I'm looking for an upset special, here it is, ladies and gentlemen.
I want winners. I want people that want to win.
All right, listen, I'm trying. I want winners, but seriously, I like the Bears here at home. The only other useless stat I have to back that up is Carson Palmer, 3-0 in his career versus the Bears. Of course, those games were with Cincinnati. I'm going to take Chicago here at home in a little bit of an upset special. Next game, Chargers versus the Bengals. Ryan, this is yours.
Shame on me last week for saying the Chargers would lose because you can't trust them. I completely forgot you can't trust the Lions either, so just want to throw that out there. But our Chargers super fan says great effort last week. He's right. He says Rivers needs to be protected. A little trouble there, but their offense was so good in the second half. I remember last week. He wants to see more Melvin Gordon. I agree with him. I thought he looked pretty good. Defensively, he says they need to stop the run. He wants to make Andy Dalton beat them. And in the end, people should feel comfortable picking the Chargers because our quarterback is just so much better than Dalton. That is a quote. That is true. I will counter and say the Bengals are at home. I'm going to read from the super fan here. And the Bengals went through the Raiders like a hot butter through a regular knife, or whatever you want to say, from last week. Our super fan, English Simon, says they need revenge for the beatdown in the playoffs 2 years ago. They're a better team now, and he hoped to build on the performance from last week. He wants to run the ball more efficiently, open up the passing game, because he says the Chargers D look great. First quarter removed, yep. And he's expecting another chippy performance from the defense, and he's hopeful that they force a few more turnovers as we did last week. That was the Raiders, but Philip can turn it over sometimes, although I do love Philip Rivers, and he's great. He thinks they'll win by a TD. I'm going to say my pick is going with the Bengals. A lot of the reason, and I don't like to do this with all the games, but it is because they're at home and they played so well at home last year. I remember it was just a tough place to play, especially like their first five games or something of the season, I think. This is kind of a big game. It's two good AFC teams that maybe can make the playoffs. It's only week two. I'm going to go with Cincinnati.
Well, I'm going to give you some useless stats to help make you feel a little bit better here. The Bengals have won the past three matchups here. The last time they played was dating back to 2013. Ben Jarvis Green Ellis went crazy for 92 yards and a touchdown. But I'll also let you know about the better quarterback. Well, Andy Dalton now has a 41-23-1 career regular season record. That's the highest win percentage of any Bengals quarterback of 20 starts. And Dalton, who has 101, joined Ken Anderson, Boomer Esiason, and Carson Palmer as the only Bengals with 100 career touchdown passes. I am also going to take the Bengals at home. We have next up on the list, Titans versus Browns. Greg, this game is yours because you asked for it.
Well, to get the things right off the top, Neil, our Titans fan, did not write in from what I could tell, so he gets the for shame.
Shame.
And it's very disappointing because I was interested in what his take was going to be on Mariota and the now newly running Dick LeBeau defense there. But our Browns superfan, Rob, he did write in, and he's going to be looking for if this new and improved defense can actually stop the run. And he's a little pessimistic about the quarterback position. He doesn't think it matters if McCown or Manziel is playing. But they should be able to do enough to stay in the game with Tennessee. He's also hoping that now with an inexperienced running back and quarterback combo, that the packages that the defense is running will be more effective than they were against the Jets. And he didn't give a game prediction or anything. But as my little side note, why I requested the game, I live in Cleveland, and I've been listening to a lot of the Cleveland Talk Radio in the last 48 hours because I've been in the car a lot. And I just need to tell my neighbors to stop it. They're already talking about firing their coach and running the GM out of town and, you know, throwing it away because they are worried that last year they lost the last six games of the season, and so they've lost seven straight now, and the sky is falling. And I mean, come on. You guys are Cleveland. I get it that your team has been horrible. I cannot stand hearing my coworkers and my neighbors talk about firing their coach again. I mean, it
they
is just driving
me nuts. Thought they were. And we let
exactly.
them, they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
Exactly. So I'm going with the no one cares, but I'm going with the Titans as my eliminator pick for the week. Because, I mean, come on. The whole city, there's going to be a riot if they win. Because, I mean, the whole city thinks they're like the worst team ever. So.
Well, here come the useless stats. And they are quite useless. The Browns have won four of their past six. Now, the last time they, in fact, last season, the Browns won 29-28 on October 5th. Brian Hoyer threw for 291 yards and three touchdowns as they overcame a 28-3 deficit. That said, I don't foresee the same situation happening here again. I liked what I saw out of Mariota, or should I say Mariota. Marcus Mariota had a great game last week. I don't know if the rookie is going to do it again with four touchdowns in the first half, but I do think he's going to bring the Titans to another victory here this game. Lions and Vikings, Andrew, that's all you.
On the Browns situation, if Browns fans keep thinking firing your GM is going to solve the problem, I don't know if that's all they've been doing and nothing's been changing. The problem is you got to find a quarterback. So maybe you suck it up this year, finally get a good pick and draft the quarterback you need. But firing Mike Pettine, who my experience, he was the Jets defensive coordinator under Rex Ryan. He was the Bills defensive coordinator last year. I mean, 2 years. You find a quarterback that can play, and then you'll be in business. But if we're talking about the Lions and Vikings, these are two teams coming off very disappointing week one performance. The Vikings on national television on Monday night. Teddy Bridgewater had the worst game that I ever saw him have as a pro. He just seemed off on everything. Maybe it was just the conditions playing on a national TV on a late game Monday night. It's like 9:45 Central Time. I don't know. But he didn't look right. But and also they didn't get Adrian Peterson the ball enough. So I think they're going to change their game, become more run heavy, and try to exploit that way, who no longer has the defensive lineman they had last year with the departure of Ndamukong Suh, Nick Fairley, CJ Mosley. And on Detroit's side of the ball against San Diego, Matthew Stafford was throwing the ball all over the field. They got up to a 21-0 lead. But then Melvin Ingram laid a hit on Matt Stafford, and he didn't look the same since then, and then they blew the game. There are some reports coming out that there's a shoulder injury there, but no one's really confirming or denying anything there. So he's probably just going to suck it up, just like he did on that sound effects clip. I don't know if you guys ever saw this, but like Stafford's rookie year when they were facing the Browns, he got jacked up on the second to last play. He ignored the doctors, came back in the game, and led a game-winning drive. So we know he could play through injury. I don't like what Detroit is doing here. I don't Caldwell. I think Kramer has the advantage on the coaching side of the ball. So I'm going to go with the Vikings. Neither a super fan. Again, I don't know what's going on this week, but there's nothing out there for either of them. So I'm assuming each of them picked their own teams, but I'm going to go with
Shame to the super fans. Here come the useless stats. This time, though, I'm taking them from the ESPN.com Eliminator Challenge game. They often offer up some pretty good statistics. Mentioning power meets power, as Detroit has allowed the fewest rushing yards per game to opponents dating back to the start of last season at just 70.8 per game. Of course, they had Ndamukong Suh in there. That might have helped. But as an inviting template for the Lions to consider, the 49ers blitzed Teddy Bridgewater on 35% of his dropbacks in week one, and that forced an interception sacks when they sent five or more rushers at the passer. I like the Lions in this game. I didn't believe in the Vikings going in, and I'm still not believing in the Vikings now, especially since they were supposed to beat the team I really didn't believe in, the San Francisco 49ers, and they failed to do that. Next up here, we have the Rams and the Redskins. Ryan, that's your game.
All right. Well, the St. Louis Rams are obviously impressive, winning in overtime last week. A Rams superfan mentions that they had the youngest team in the NFL for the fourth straight year, and they have letdowns after big victories in the past. That's very interesting. So he kind of hopes that changes this week. And he says, I don't think Jeff Fisher will be having all the players from the RG3 trade have captains in this game like he did last year, which was pretty great, I gotta say. After rewatching some of the game, he's more impressed with Nick Foles, especially because they were without Trey Mason and Gurley. Let's move on down here. He likes Foles in the play action. He wrote a lot, so go to our Facebook page and check it out. I'm just trying to do some of the bullet points here. He says that the Rams shut out the Redskins in Washington last year, and you can see their defense doing well again. D-line dominated Washington last year. So, and the absence of DeSean Jackson is huge, he says. And against speed, the Rams often struggle against speed receivers, and their weakness is their cornerbacks. And says their cornerbacks are banged up right now. The Rams are. He predicts a 24-10 victory. And, you know what? Those are all really good points. And Nick Foles, maybe we got to keep an eye on him and how he does here. And, I wouldn't really mind if he proved me wrong, but I'm not a believer in the Rams. I feel like I'm one of the only ones out here. And Washington kept it close with Miami last week with Kirk Cousins at the helm. Our Redskins super fan, another shame. I don't think we have a preview. If somebody saw one, please tell me, but another shame there. So for the Redskins, all I got to say is they're back home. They're 0-1. I like the angle that St. Louis doesn't play well after big victories, and I am going to go with the Washington Redskins at home. The only thing that scares me is that Aaron Donald is a monster, and maybe, I don't know, he'll just win the game on his own. I know that's not really true, but gotta love that guy. He's very, very impressive.
I'm going the dumbest team in America in terms of playing the game.
Yeah, well,
and picking games. I mean, come on.
I am picking
the Redskins.
Oh gosh. Maybe I shouldn't have picked this game because I can't wait until later. There's a little teaser for you. I'm picking the Redskins. Wow. They did not look terrible, and I don't believe in the Rams. This is a classic trap game. Rams beat Seattle in overtime. Oh my gosh, they're going to the Super Bowl. I think this is a classic NFL. Every team's pretty good. Redskins going to win.
Jeff Fisher's a better coach than that. As much as I hate Jeff Fisher, he has won three of the past four. Well, I should say the Rams have won three of their past four here, including last year's shutout. Their defense had 7 sacks, forced 4 turnovers in that game. I don't have much of a difference between last year. I mean, I was questioning why the Rams were everyone's darling. Defense was definitely something that was being pointed to. Defense will be strong here against the Kirk Cousins led Redskins. I just don't see it. But hey, that's why we do these shows. Next up is the Bucks versus the Saints. Andrew, that one is yours.
Right. So Chase, our Saints super fan, saw that the key to the game is going to see if the Saints can get penetration on the Bucs offensive line. The Saints had no such thing against Arizona last week. And Arizona's offensive line isn't anything really to write home about, but the Buccaneers arguably have the worst offensive line in football. So if the Saints can't get pressure on Jameis Winston, that's not a good sign for the rest of the season. And our Buccaneer superfan Daniel says that's also that matchup's going to factor. Can the Buccaneers keep Jameis Winston in the pocket and not on his ass? So if he could have enough time to get the ball to Mike Evans, to Vincent Jackson, he could take advantage of a shaky New Orleans secondary. But both of these super fans think the Saints are going to come out the victory. And I actually have the Saints in my eliminator pool. Again, nobody cares, but I have them winning. And I think most of everyone else does. And especially looking here at the Pigskin Pick'em, like, there's a little sliver of green next to the Buccaneers. I don't think there might be two people in the world picking the Buccaneers this week, which means they're probably going to win, but I'm staying with the Saints.
Yeah, people actually have the Saints in their eliminator pool this week. Let me give you the exact percentage. 34.5%, the top pick in eliminator for ESPN.com right now. I am going with the Saints. I've got no real good useless stats here for you other than they've won the past 7. They are at home. That's usually a good place for them. Last year wasn't as much, but usually the Superdome is a great place for the Saints, and the Bucks have a rookie in Jameis Winston at the helm. I just don't like the Buccaneers' chances here. There's really not much more to say about that than that. The 49ers and the Steelers. Greg, I think you're a super fan of one of these teams.
Oh, I am. We'll start with the Niners, though. We'll defer to the away team. So Niners coach, new coach, Jim Tomsula, grew up 20 minutes from downtown Pittsburgh, our Niners super fan writes. He also writes that the Reggie Bush is not likely to play in the game after being injured on Sunday. So the rugby rookie, Jared Haney, will now likely get some more duty outside of just returns. Look for the rookie Mike Davis to be activated as a backup running back also. The Niners last week only allowed one third down conversion to steal the to stall the very high powered offense they faced. Then he also is saying that some stuff about my defense not being very good against Carlos Hyde and we should be shaking in our boots. So I'm going to omit some of that because I don't like it. But he predicts the Niners to win 17-14. So now on to the
interesting
eventual Super Bowl champions here. The Steelers, I think, are going to I think the Steelers are going to do a lot better this week on defense. And the major reason is going to be that they're not facing Tom Brady, who I believe Tom Brady and Peyton Manning before the snap are probably the two best quarterbacks in the league at dissecting what the defense is trying to do. And, you know, last week, well, I don't want to talk about last week's game. So moving on, I also think that Mike Tomlin likes to play his proven veterans early in the season and likes to have them play their way out of the starting lineup. So I'm looking for Cortez Allen to be replaced by Boykin at cornerback this week, because I think Cortez Allen finally played himself out of Pittsburgh. And God help me if Hayward Bay is the third wide receiver this week. I mean, yeah, I'm just looking for Sammy Coates to get a shot, and hopefully he can have a Martavis Bryant-type rookie year. On the offensive line, I think Cody Wallace had some real rough spots. I look for him to be better with his mental errors and maybe not giving up a sack or whatnot. And then the last thing is I'm going to hope that that former Jaguar kicker doesn't miss two field goals again. And hopefully if he does that again, I think he's out of town. We're going to be having our fourth kicker this year. So I'm looking for the score to be something around 28-19.
Scoby, Scoby, dope. The Steelers, by the way, will have their hands full as they did lose their last matchup against this team. That was back in 2011. They won the last game at this site against the 49ers back in 2007. Willie Parker ran for 133 yards in that one. That's how useless these stats are here. I will tell you a little bit of something about Antonio Brown. I think a lot of you already know, but dating back to 2021, he leads the NFL in catches with 248 and receiving yards with 3,330. 7-plus catches in 12 consecutive games. That's the longest streak in NFL history. And in those past 12 games, he's averaging 8.7 catches, 110 yards, 9 touchdown catches. That's pretty good. Going to take the Steelers here with confidence, not as confident as you might think Vegas would have this game. Vegas has the Steelers as 6.5-point favorites. I like it less than a touchdown, but I still think the Steelers are going to come away with a victory, just not by a full touchdown. That would be silly to think. Maybe. I don't know. Next game up here is the Texans and the Panthers. Ryan, what do you got for me?
Well, Houston was had a disappointing week, says our super fan. And I know I'm very on the record saying I'm down on the Texans just because I don't think there's much to them when you really dig deep. Of course, Hoyer was was very disappointing, I should say. Let's go into what he says. You know, they switched out Mallett in the fourth quarter, to which all fans rejoice. So they're happy about this. Later on, he does ask who will start for QB for the Texans, but I think it's out there already that Mallett is the guy. Maybe our Texans guy got this in early, in which case, kudos. But I'm pretty sure it's everywhere now that Mallett is going to be the guy. They gave up 27 points in the first half to Kansas City. He says to their credit, they did shut the Chiefs out in the second half, but it was too little too late. I agree with him there. And he was wondering if it was just a bad half for the Texans defense, or is this unit not as great as we all thought? One thing I was very interested in, he does mention Clowney and showed that he showed good signs, insane power and explosiveness off the edge. And he hopes that he solidifies the unit. JJ Watt, unfortunately, can't do it all himself. He says, my goodness, 9 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 2 sacks last week. JJ Watt is a monster and very, very good, no matter what Mark Sitko says. Love Sitko. I just got to say that. I love J.J. Watt. Come on. I said that, not the Texans superfan. He says last week was a big wake-up call for the Texans and fully expects them to play a much more disciplined and efficient game. Says Carolina's running game may prove trouble. Let's go to our Carolina fan, who I have to scroll down a little bit here. But Carolina, of course, played my Jacksonville Jaguars last week. And our Carolina superfan admits, I agree, this should be a rather boring game. Both offenses are bad. Kelce was great versus Houston in week one, and I'd look to get Greg Olsen to do the same. So he's seeing some tight end love there. He was happy with how their O-line played, and he says it should be a relatively low score, 17-14 type game. He says, I think it'll be a coin flip, and I'd give the edge to the home team. And I kind of agree with him. I am down on the Texans and high on the Panthers. And Panthers are at home. They should expect to win. I'm going to go with the Carolina Panthers.
Well, this gives me an opportunity because the useless stats are extremely useless for this particular game. And I'm going with the Panthers here based on the home record and the fact that Cam Newton won his only start in Houston. That was way back in 2011. But the Little Texans had their debut game last week. It was a defensive battle as there were picks all over the field. The Little Texans had five. However, they also gave up three picks of their own. The most important player on the Little Texans, I can't say that. That's mean. Because he's coach's son, and everybody knows the coach's son is biased. The coach is biased to the coach's son. But he did throw a touchdown and an extra point in this game. So that was a good job by the Little Texans. This week, the Little Texans are in the Little Bengals. So we'll see how the Australians do against us this Saturday morning. Update obviously on social media. Follow me at The Real Pod Vader. I mentioned I'm going with the Panthers here. So we move on to the 4 o'clock games. Actually, with only two games left, Greg, you have the Ravens and the Raiders.
Rex, the king of the superfans, writes in with a lot of recap of last week's game, which you can read on our Facebook page. But he also, the 2 points he made in his write up was about how he is slightly concerned about the protecting of Flacco, and after doing it so well last year, is this a result of the Denver pass rush from last week, or is this a real problem they have going forward? And then the other big thing that he's writing in about is the issue of filling in for Terrell Suggs, which if you've missed it, he tore his Achilles tendon, and he's gone for the year. So where is the pass rush going to come from? Courtney Upshaw, the other linebacker from Alabama. He's going to be starting in his place for the foreseeable future. But Rex is also looking for them maybe to give Arthur Brown, an inside linebacker that has been a bust from 2013 draft, a chance to get some playing time. He's interested to see what they might do with him there. He did not give a prediction for this week other than to say we're on to Oakland. So then Monty, our Raiders super fan, who is Monty, by the way, is a good sport. He always writes a lot and very colorful. So I'm going to dumb it down here a little bit for us. But again, if you want to see this, you can go out to the Facebook page. But Derek Carr's injury is a huge hurdle, but he's actually also very concerned about the injuries to Nate Allen and Charles Woodson. Carr might play on Sunday, but if he doesn't, they have an average backup and Matt McGoin as the Raiders quarterback. He thinks that the only
chance... I just want to jump in here real quick. Hold on. But I can't allow him to get away with calling Matt McGoin an average quarterback. I've got the stats sitting right here, ready to go.
He did say average backup. So,
all right. Well, he has 11 scores and 11 picks, claims a lowly 43.9 QBR and 9 pro appearances. I don't know if that is average for backups. Maybe it is, but Matt McGloin should not be instilling any sort of confidence in Monty. I will not allow it.
Is that as good as Tebow, or I'm lost on that one? So,
that is obligatory Tebow mention, but there's really not that big a difference between Derek Carr and Matt McGloin. At least that's the opinion a lot of Raiders fans share. So, yeah, there might not be that big a drop off, but Derek Carr wasn't so good in the first place. So I don't see how they're going to move the ball on a Ravens defense that really completely shut down Peyton Manning last week.
Does Monty have anything positive to say about his team and his write-up?
He does.
I'm telling you right now, this is my lock of the week. About that action, boss. Yeah,
Monty definitely thinks they have a revenge factor here. If they got Dan Williams to jump on Joe Flacco's shoulder and dislocate it like they did to Tony Siragusa did to Rich Gannon back in the 2000 playoffs, then he thinks it's a lock. But other than that, he thinks that the Latavius Murray is going to have a huge day.
Yeah, Flacco's 3-0 versus the Raiders. He passed for 341 yards, 4 total touchdowns, 3 passing, 1 rushing in his last meeting against the Raiders, which was granted in 2012. But we're talking about Joe Flacco. I believe Flacco can do it again. Lock of the week, Ravens, despite being on the road. That's across country. I'm still taking them. All right. The last full preview of a game here is the Dolphins versus the Jags. Ryan, that is your team, I believe.
Yes, it is. The Jacksonville Jaguars are and always will be. But let's start with the Miami Dolphins and our man, Ron. I like Ron. He's very active. This is a good guy. Although he's feeling a little nervous already in our messaging with each other. He's nervous about this team. But about this game, he says that he'll make it quick because there isn't a lot to add. Miami's a much more talented team than Jacksonville. Never has a team in NFL history from coach to coach done a better job of playing down to their competition, he says. And this was evident in week one. So again, he says they're favored and should win handily, but he doubt it happens. And he says if they were playing the Packers, they'd start up by 3 TDs just because that's the Dolphins, bringing their game to the level of competition, regardless who it is. If you're a playoff team, you win big, period. So been to Jacks and lose or squeak another one out. Not a playoff team, in my opinion, 2-0 or not. So he's not very confident in his Miami Dolphins. All right, guys, listen, I know we haven't been together long, and my Redskins pick was apparently very crazy. I'm just going to seem like the big clown of the group here. I've never done this in my entire fandom life, I don't believe, but the Jacksonville Jaguars, who were not awful last week, just very disappointing, poor offense and everything to Carolina, a lot of momentum gone. Week 3, we play at New England. Week 4, we play at Indianapolis. So I'm looking at those 2 weeks. Miami has 2 division games coming up, both at home, I believe, and they started these 2 off on the road at the Redskins and now at the Jaguars. They go home for 2 division games, very important. They're 1-0. Jags are 0-1. Classic 1-0, feeling a little good. 0-1, feeling extremely desperate. 3 years in the making of this regime with Gus Bradley and Dave Caldwell and Blake Bortles now in his second year. I will tell you right now, the Dolphins are clearly, they are a better team than the Jaguars, but for the first time in my life, and I'm sticking my neck out there, I am guaranteeing a Jacksonville Jaguars win. That is a guarantee.
Whoa.
Joe Namath going to the Super Bowl win. I would like to make a bet with our man Ron Caniff. I've made a bet with one of my friends who's a Dolphins fan already. I'm completely fine with taking all the flack that I'll get if I am wrong. It's fine with me. This is a guarantee. Jags are going to win this game. Otherwise, they start off 0-4, and there's a lot of trouble going on. Joe Namath. Ryan. Joe Namath Mercier is my name.
I love it. I love the confidence there. Clearly, this is why you are the Jaguars super fan. I will let you know, ESPN Stats and Information is giving you a little bit of hope, saying that Tannehill has success, stretches the field. It has led to victories for the Dolphins. They're 12-2 when he completes at least 60% of his deep downfield throws in the games. Now, the Jags will need, this is their words, I'm reading straight from ESPN.com. The Jaguars will need their quietly talented pass rush. They were sixth in sacks last season with 45 to persistently pressure Tannehill and corral him as he attempts to deftly control the pocket with his rare athleticism at the position. This is fantastic writing. I should find out if this is AJ Mass writing these. I think it is. The real question for the Jaguars likely lies in their lackluster offense, a group that has produced the second fewest yards per play, 4.65 in the league, dating back to 2014. And that's where I believe is where your guarantee falls short. And pun is very much intended. I will take the Dolphins. I will take the Dolphins here to beat the Jaguars. Andrew, your game, it's Monday Night Football. You have recorded a superfan battle. That is going to be heard on our Sunday night show hosted by Mark Sitko. And folks, you'll be able to hear that probably late Sunday night, but definitely first thing Monday morning, assuming we can herd the cats to record a show this week, Sunday night. Andrew, give us a quick teaser of what we can hear in your superfan battle.
The game is going to come down to whether Andrew Luck can carry the Colts like he's carried them the past 3 years, because Ryan Grigson has not done a good job of putting talent around him. I mean, they've skill position wise, they have put talent, but on the defense and on the offensive line and the run game, it's really quite bare. And if the Jets could follow the same game plan that the Bills followed this past week and try to bully the Colts in the trenches, the Jets could come out with a win. I'll save the prediction for you guys Sunday night, but let's just say I'm feeling a little bit optimistic, quite like our friend Ryan over there, who I also agree, I think the Jaguars are going to come out with the win on Sunday, but maybe that's just because my Jets bias leaking into the Dolphins-Jaguars game. But
all right.
Stay tuned for that.
Are you guaranteeing? Are you going out on a limb and guaranteeing a Jaguars victory as you did?
I'll let Ryan stick his neck out on the guillotine. I'll wait a bit. Well, for later in the season. It's only week two, Ryan. You should save your bullets.
As the representative of the Jacksonville Jaguars, I could tell you I don't have very many bullets.
I will not be joining you between now and Monday night. So for the Jets Colts game, I will say the Jets do own a nice record here against the Colts. They have won the past two versus the Colts. The last game was in 2012. Mark Sanchez threw two touchdown passes. So as I go to ESPN.com, the Eliminator game, I will just note that the Colts are head favorites. They are one of just four teams since 2014 to average 400 total offensive yards at home. And I think that will play well in their favor. Obviously, the Jets are a good defensive team. Obviously, they are in the same division as the Bills, and the Bills pulled off that big upset last week. Still going to stick here with the Colts at home. I just can't believe they'll drop to 0-2, being everyone's Super Bowl darlings, especially against the Jets. But that could also be a little bit of my bias leaking in there. We'll have to wait and see. I'm looking forward to listening to the Superfan battle on Sunday night, as all of it could be. Tune in again Sunday as Mark Sitko will lead another bevy of superfans into the recaps here of week two. Thank you, Ryan. Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Andrew. You can email us nextfanup@gmail.com if you want to be another superfan for a Seattle superfan, and all of those that you've heard that have felt shame over the past few weeks, send in an application, because if you're going to promise us to be on time with your updates and be on the show on a regular basis, then hey, you can take over those jobs. All those people that should be feeling shame should also be feeling like their job is on the line. Tweet us at NFU Podcast. Facebook, you can check out what the superfans that did do their job. You can check out all of their previews at facebook.com/NFU Podcast. And on that note, I'm just going to have to say, there you have it.
Well, I think we learned today that, this game is four quarters long.